period. Gord Stellick was Joe Bowen's play-by-play partner on the radio broadcasts back in the day, and he joins us now to tee up tonight's contest and also to deal with the serious issues of the morning. Like Gord, do you know the words to the theme song from the Golden Girls?
Well, I was going to say, sadly, you talked about different things. I was saying I might have a Golden Girls poster even. Yeah, it is one of the very underrated funny shows. So, yes, I believe, God, we're going to talk about deep dives. I think Betty White might be the only person still alive, living from that show. And Wayne Gretzky was either on the All My Children, YNR, something like that. And he went in a bar and just said, I'm Wayne from Edmonton, something like that. Because apparently he watched a lot of TV in the afternoon. So I do know Ziggy is correct about Wayne Gretzky appearing on a soap opera. So there you go. I hopefully help with some of the issues of the morning.
All right, Gord, we're going to take you back to 1993 and a little montage we put together from Game 7 of the Leafs-Red Wings series.
It was the turning point in the franchise.
Rouse drives it right back in again. Here's Clark down the boards to Gilmore.
With Harold being around in the 80s, it was great to be here, and it was great to, you know, be a part of everything. But you really didn't think management really gave two fluies whether they won or not.
Gilmore to Bobby Rouse. Shot. Scores! Nikolai Borisevsky has scored for Toronto. The Leafs win. The Leafs win.
But then with Cliff Fletcher arriving, and that series literally turned the corner for the franchise.
Game on Monday against St. Louis.
A shot from the point by Bob Rouse is deflected by Nicky Borisevsky behind Chevalier. The Leafs win it 4-3 in overtime.
Wow. That takes us back, and it doesn't feel that long ago. I remember that call. Gord, I remember that call like it was yesterday. And to tee it up, I mean, I don't need to ask you where you were. We know where you were. You were in the arena. I clearly remember as a family. So my folks, my younger brother and me, we were at Swiss Chalet having dinner. The South Down Road, Swiss Chalet, just off the QEW in that little strip mall before Game 7. And I was saying to my dad at dinner, I said, you know, geez, could you imagine if they win this hockey game tonight? And he was less than optimistic. And of course, the Leafs, in their three losses in that series, they got their butts kicked. Games 1, 2, and 6. So he was less than optimistic, but we buckled down. We got home, watched that game. And of course, Borisevsky's epic goal happened. The environment in the arena, What was your reaction? We heard a little bit of it, but what was your physical reaction when Borisevsky tipped that Rouse shot? And what do you remember about the environment in the arena in that moment?
I'll tell you, it's funny, Scott, because walking to Game 7, now she's my wife, Lisa, came to that game. So her comment was, wow, this seems pretty dead for a Game 7. The Red Wing fans were angry. They were fed up that they even had to go to a Game 7. They were fed up of some playoff disappointments after disappointments. So the Leafs had really nothing to lose, and the Red Wing fans were expecting to move deeper in the playoffs. So when it all happened, and it's funny, both Game 5 and Game 7, the Leafs came back in Joe Louis Arena, which was a tough, tough thing to do. And the game goes into overtime, and that goal happens. And, you know, first of all, I get to listen to Bonesy's call. I'm right next to him. And there's just this, surrealness. You know, holy crap, this is... Wow, this seems so unattainable for so many years. And there's a muted response by 90% of the crowd, and then 10% of the crowd is going nuts. And I'm actually a little worried thinking, because you know what it can be like. Sometimes you're in an opposing team arena. They better be careful. They might, you know, they could get the crap beat out of them or stuff thrown at them, whatever. But no, the fans just left in disgust. That was kind of it. They were so pissed off about the Wings, and there was this small group of Leaf fans that just had this kind of unbridled joy about the whole thing. And, you know, your memory, Scott, about the broadcast, we drove home that night with actually Lisa, myself, Damian Cox, and a guy named Mark Askin, who's a top producer, TV producer. We just kind of got going, and we listened to the whole broadcast on the way home, like part of our drive home. And as a matter of fact, when we were pulling in to drop one of them off, it came to overtime, and we pulled off to the side of the road at like 4 a.m. or whatever it was, just to hear that kind of call. So it was like a day that made the last 15 years all worthwhile.
Going into that overtime, Gord, a guy from each team that you guys were talking about who would get it? Because I'm sure almost everybody, when you're up in the booth, you kind of pick a guy maybe off air as your guy to score the goal. Was Borshevsky's anyone's pick?
Ziggy, not Nicky Borshevsky. And it's funny, in game 5 and game 7, you know, Pat Burns getting those guys on the ice that don't, you know, weren't one of the top three lines, and they come up with huge goals. So what struck me about this series, that I listened to the game last night and I've watched a few of the games. Now, this is early on. Later, of course, they take on St. Louis and Los Angeles. There's just this great run of 21 games in 42 nights. And right now, we're early on in it in Detroit. And later on, like, to me, Doug Gilmore and Wendell Clark were just owning it. But Wendell was getting criticism in Detroit about his contribution. So, you know, Dougie would have been the logical guy. But, you know, I think maybe I picked a guy like Dave Andrechuk, and I can't remember who I picked from Detroit. But it was interesting that, you know, you go into overtime, and something I'd never experienced, a game seven or game five or whatever the final game of a series was, overtime for the Leafs. And you know, you kind of had a feel that the pressure was on the other guys. And Nikolai Borshevsky being out there so early in it, and of course it's a shot from the point by Rouse and a nice deflection, was, again, an example of, you know, Pat Burns just seemed to have really the great knack as a bench coach.
Gord Stellick is our guest, and when we have Maple Leafs games, he is the host of Leafs Nation pre and post here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Tell us a bit about Nikolai Borshevsky. He might have been 140 pounds dripping wet, Gord, it seemed. And of course, a year or two later, you would remember the date better than me. He suffered a pretty serious injury. Didn't he lacerate his spleen? And he ended up having that removed. What kind of a guy was he? What were there any stories about Nikki Borshevsky?
You know, you're right about that. Next year was against the Florida Panthers, and it was an innocent hit from Bill Lindsay. And, you know, Nikki just disappeared. And then you found out overnight that he'd ruptured his spleen, which is a real, real serious injury. And he was never the same player. He came over that year with Dmitry Mironov. It was good to have them paired together and, you know, have somebody else from Russia as well. He was an older guy to come over as a rookie. And I golfed with him in the Leaf golf tournament by coincidence. And he kind of was like a Russian Fonzie. He was dressed in a leather jacket. It was cold outside. He had no interest in golfing, but he was pleasant. His English wasn't the best, but he really contributed early that season. And then later on, you know, became a bit more of a spot player that went on. So it's interesting that early on, he'd been a big story there, and then kind of had cooled off. So a pleasant guy. So that Lindsay contract, you know, or that Lindsay hit, he never got the next big contract. And I think, you know, Ziggy helps coach and things like that, knows that for, geez, years, Nikki Borshevsky was available if you wanted to hire him for whatever to help teach skills to your younger team. Like, Mironov got that next big contract, so he's retired in Toronto and part of the alumni. So, you know, Nikki probably would have had a better career, but that injury was, you know, well, it didn't end his career, but his career was never the same.
How much pressure was, we all know the pressure on the goaltenders is immense, and getting the playoffs, it's every single shot. I mean, it's huge, but what was the feeling around Felix Potvin? Cause he was like the guy. And if he didn't keep Toronto in games, they were a team at the time that, you know, you didn't expect much. Did you sense that there was a lot of pressure on a guy like Felix, especially during that run?
Because they were the underdog, if you remember Ziggy and Scott, like really back-to-back, one year was Tim Cheveldayoff and the next year Bob Asenza. Like the pressure was all on the Red Wings, and those guys basically had to leave town because they incurred too much blame for it. I can remember we were flying to, I think we were flying for, I don't know if it was game five or game, I guess game seven, and the Red Wings had a psychologist, and we kind of kidded after talking to him saying, the Red Wings psychologist needs a psychologist. Like they were just, it was so in their head about game number 7. And, you know, Ziggy, you know, to your point, Cliff makes the big trade. You heard Joe Bowen alluding it to get Dave Andrechuk, but he moves Grant Fuhr in that deal. So giving Felix the job was kind of akin to, you know, James Reimer getting the job, you know, somebody else coming up, and you're kind of hoping that that guy can be the guy and take you all the way. There was an incredible amount of pressure on Felix Botvin as a 21-year-old. And from the word go, and his demeanor was always low-key and unflappable, he got the job done because you were risking a lot to have a flat-on rookie goaltender who you really didn't plan to be on your team for another couple of years, but you just could not pass up the chance to get Dave Andrechuk.
And I was going to take you back to that trade of Grant Fuhr and then handing the reins to a rookie goaltender in Potvin. Gord, you can't, as you say, turn down the opportunity to acquire a 50-goal scorer, and Andrechuk would go on to score 50-plus that year, so it would be a hybrid Buffalo-Toronto season. He would also score 50-plus the next year with the Maple Leafs. I mean, it was a great, great trade by Cliff Fletcher, but it is ballsy because Grant Fuhr, it's not like you're trading a veteran goaltender who's just kind of been around. I mean, you were trading Grant Fuhr, who'd won all of those Stanley Cups with the Oilers in their heyday. I would imagine that Cliff must have at least gone back and forth in his mind. Can I truly trust that we're a good enough team structurally and defensively to hold the fort in front of a rookie netminder? Because if we trade away Grant Fuhr, there's really going to be no fallback.
You and Darren Pupa came over in the trade, and that was a little bit of a backup that way, that if you needed kind of a more veteran to be there, Pupa would be that guy. Again, he was no Grant Fuhr. And you're right about it, Scott, in that just, well, a year and a half earlier, that was the motive in acquiring Grant Fuhr and Glenn Anderson. I mean, people talk about the Calgary trade being the big trade, the Dougie Gilmore trade that he made, but his first one was with Edmonton, and he got those two veterans, and he gave up a lot of youth. You know, he gave the big one, of course, is Vinny Donfus, who went on to have a lot of success later, especially with Montreal. But it was Scott Thornton, it was Peter Ng, it was Luke Richardson. You know, he gave up a whack of young guys to get that experience in. So he did that to get the stability and goal. And then after, he just felt Dave Andrechuk was too good to pass up. And Darren Pupa was kind of the plan B there. If Felix Potvin couldn't do it, at least he had a body, you know, a good body that could basically handle it.
Thanks for this, Gord.